I've been long exploring the question, what does it mean to be a good man? You know, in my own journey of wanting to be the most integral, live at my highest potential, be a great partner, these are all things that I really aspire to generate positive impact in the world and the people I'm in relationship with. And like any human, we let people down. We fail to keep our word. We are imperfect and fallible. It's not perfection that bonds people, it's imperfection that actually connects us. It's the recognition that we see ourselves in other people's challenges. And that's why in a world that tries to demonstrate absolute, I got all my poop in a group, we know that's inauthentic, it's not real. In today's conversation, I interview Dan Doty. Dan Doty is a producer, a writer, a podcast host. He runs men's groups, and he takes men, like some of the most powerful work that I love of his is that he takes men into the wilderness. He takes them through initiations. He teaches men how to be good fathers and good partners and all that kind of stuff, but just, you know, in essence, be good men. So in the exploration of that question, this was the guy I had to interview because the work he's doing in the world, you could just sense from him, listening to him speak is like a warm hug. I'm so excited for you to listen to this week's episode and to get more insight, whether you're male or female, more about the male experience, but also about what can make us better parents and better partners and all that jazz. Before we dive deep into the episode, wherever you're listening to this podcast, make sure you hit subscribe so you do not miss any future episodes. Because again, we have so many going deeper and deeper into the human experience and what it means to be in relationship to everything in the world. And how do we get better at all that so that we can get into a more aligned relationship with ourselves and be proud of who we're being. So without further ado, here's Dan Doty. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. Today I'm joined by writer, wilderness guide, men's work leader, somatic meditation teacher. It sounds like a bunch of people. And also a massive, massive leader in men's work, global men's movement, and maybe more recently, but not really recent, serious leader in the space of fathers. And I'm so excited to have you on, Dan. Dan Doty.
Thanks, man. Excited to chat.
Yeah, man. I'm like, when I dive into your podcast, and I don't know why I didn't find it before I became a dad. That would have been helpful. So if you're listening to this and you know an expectant father, or you are one, or you are a father, it's incredible. And I'm curious, what leads a guy from all the things you've been doing, like producing Maneater, to then starting Everyman, to then... Now, like it's, I just love the, what is the common thread that goes through those things?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you a quick story because it is the common thread. When I was 22, I was living in Panama with my girlfriend at the time.
As you do, of course.
Yeah. Writing a novel and just, you know, kind of fucking off for a year. And I got a job on Craigslist. Well, I didn't get a job for Craigslist. I got a job through Craigslist for a wilderness therapy program in Utah. And I didn't know what that was when I applied. But basically, it's a private company that takes young men on very substantial initiations and rites of passage in the wilderness with therapeutic support. And I stumbled into my calling, right? I literally just like got dumped off a plane and got on a shitty van and drove out to the middle of the desert and like found my people and found my calling. And I started my first part of my career, which was leading these groups of gangly, angry, misfit boys on these, you know, 100-day expeditions.
Wow. And wait, 100-day?
Sometimes more, man. So they'd be out there 120, 150 days sometimes. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a whole episode in itself to talk about that. But specifically, I mean, first of all, I loved it, man. It was like all of me got to show up in a new way. It was this whole new world. And I got to specifically experience that setting when fathers of these boys would fly in from Chicago and LA and New York and Boston, stop at REI, grab their new gear, and then come out to the wilderness for a week, right? And what happened in that was something I had no expectation of. But what I got to see was what happened when boys and their fathers had the conditions set for the walls to come down between them. I get the chills even just anytime I feel into these memories, I get the full body like woomph feeling, right? And just picture, I guess let me back the story up just a little bit. So when these dads would walk into the field, I remember sitting next to a fire with a 16-year-old boy, and it felt like I wasn't on drugs, but it felt like I was on LSD. And it felt like I could feel and hear the hair on the back of this boy's neck standing up. I could feel his muscles clench. I could feel his jaw clench. And I could see this structure of distance and like a wall, like being erected in the moment. And then through, hiking and sitting around the fire and guided practice and therapeutic process, to see this same 16-year-old thug fall apart and be held in his father's arms, and for them to both have completely open flowing hearts and professing their pride and love and care for each other.
Wow.
And this happened over and over. And it was that was the call. That was my calling. It's like, okay, there is something so critical here. And it was important for me personally too, but I just had this, that started this like strange career of being let behind the curtain of men's true selves, of their hearts, and seeing things that are not often seen.
I'm curious, was there a difference between the challenges that you saw in the 16-year-old and the challenges you saw in the father? Like what was challenging them to connect? And was it the same sort of pathology, I guess?
That's a great question. I do think generally the answer is yes. I think the same subset of conditions were just the larger norms, right? Societal norms, familial norms of what is okay, of what can be shared, what's not shared. And I do think from an inside out perspective, I feel like I've seeing the inside of the traditional masculinity, patriarchal set of ways of being. So I do think, there's obviously it manifests through dad and son in different ways.
Yeah.
This is, 15, 20 years ago, but 20 years ago. But I think the underlying structures, it's the same.
What did you, when you were noticing this and working with both the boy and the father, what did it allow you to witness in, were you deconstructing your own masculinity at the time, I suppose? Or were you on an adventure for your father? I'm just curious, what really led that? And why was it so passionate for you?
I mean, absolutely. I was on my own journey without knowing it at that time, right?
Yeah.
I was blissfully ignorant of my own inner workings to a point, right? I was young. I was in my early 20s and mid 20s. And I wasn't aware at the time of I was aware of my relationship with my father, but it didn't seem like something I needed to tend to yet, right? But I do believe that those experiences, they were overwhelmingly powerful. And, in the rearview mirror, years later, I can obviously easily see how much I loved my dad, how much I longed for his presence, how much I loved to truly be embraced by him, that was probably one of the largest motivating forces in my life that I was completely unaware of at that time. I really was. I remember going back from some of those trips and calling him and not knowing what to say or what to do, but just at least having the urge to call.
Yeah.
I missed him. I knew I missed him. I didn't realize how much I missed him, my whole life of missing him, I think.
That's powerful to think you're witnessing these experiences for these boys and fathers and then not yet experiencing that with your dad.
Yeah.
But have walked it with other people with their dads, which is like, what a profound, like, you're already touching the grace of what's possible. So you know it's possible. Then does that like create a longing and a grief in and of itself?
Yeah. And it started to work on me, you know, that started to get a hold of me. Right. And the first time that I reached into that with my own father, I suppose I was, I don't know, 26 or 27, still pretty clueless, had just started doing men's work, had just started on my own healing path. And we went on this family trip to go golfing in Central California. And I remember it was, where were we? We were like north of Big Sur. I think we were driving north out of Big Sur in a shitty little rental car. My parents, my little brother and me. And I remember being in the car and feeling the normal tension of the family, right? Just like, you know, the water that you swim in with your kid. I'm like, oh shit, this is the water, right? And I it was so uncomfortable. And so I spoke to it, right? And not with a lot of skill, I don't think, or not with a lot of things, but it literally just ignited like a massive explosion. But what netted out in that explosion was following my dad down into the basement of this Airbnb and bursting into tears and having that similar moment, having that that hug and that holding each other and the looking in the eyes and the forgiveness and the love and the all of the things. And I remember feeling afterwards like, okay, you know, like I can die with more ease now. I can die with more peace. And, you know, in a lighthearted, loving way, you know, the next morning we woke up and had breakfast. It was like it never happened.
Right? It didn't, isn't that so how it is?
It was beautiful. It was so beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think it is about like touching that depth? Because, you know, it's like as sons, and I'm sure for many of our fathers, if, you know, we were blessed to even have them around, but it's like, yeah. As sons, we crave that, and then we become fathers who go back to eating breakfast after a moment, you know? Like, what do you think it is, and what is the greatest challenge that you see for fathers today?
Well, you know, I'm a dad of three, right? I have three. They're 8, 5, and 2, and it's hard not to draw on my experience with them. And this, again, this isn't technical language, but I mean it and I really believe it, is the way that things have been, or at least the way that things were when I was raised, that, you know, my time was primarily with my mom and I was connected to her body and I was connected to her voice and I was connected to her love, and the natural flow of full love and connection and everything was all the way there, you know? And I had an experience once where I was, I had a craniosacral session, but I actually kind of relived my birth moment. Oh, wow. Like was back in the womb, and like, and what happened in that session is I came out of the woods and I came out of the, my mom, and the first thing I saw was my dad's face with a mask and his glasses. And like my first feeling was just like overjoyed love, like, fuck yeah, you're here. Like, fuck yeah. Yeah. You know? And now overlaying this with my children, like their capacity love for both my wife and I, for Elise and I, is, you know, maybe there's differences or whatever, but it's full, right? They're that when the connection to give and receive, that primal connection and love to dad is open, it's so insanely powerful. It's reoriented my whole life, right? And I've been pursuing this. I've been pursuing love and connection my whole life, but it's reoriented my whole life. And now I look back and I think about what it does to someone when that is corked, when it's felt but not expressed, when it's felt but not embodied, when that love exists and isn't met. Is I guess I would reference Bell Hooks, who wrote what I think one of the most important books for men called The Will to Change. The Will to Change, yeah. I think she spells it out perfectly with absolute clarity about the wounding that happens to boys. And in the context of father, it's primordial. It is, you know, we are viscerally, primally programmed to model after this human. And it's just so confusing, I think, on a soul level when there's blockers to that, you know,
when there's a disconnection from a behavioral sense, but also, you mean also like a literal disconnection, like maybe he's not around, maybe he's completely emotionally unavailable, maybe he is actually just not able to lead us in any way. Like, like, what do you notice when you're working with fathers who are preparing or fathers who are in it? Like, is that absence just because it's never been modeled for them? So here we are, like, with no fucking map on how to do this. And we're like, well, shit, now my son needs something from me that I don't know how to access. So my son's leading me or inspiring me to go to that.
Yes. Yes. What I see is, here's the good news. I'll start with good news, is that the wiring, the connection points, the capacity for this embodiment and connection and flow of love and emotions and energy, it is, I truly believe it is simply our human baseline. It's our human nature. It's innate, regardless of gender, or it is a fundamentally human quality to have that. And the good news is that for men, it's frighteningly close to the surface. It's like what I have done hundreds, if not thousands of times now, in a period of as little as 15 to 30 minutes, to help men ease through or relax through their habitual closures, their habitual set points, their habitual ways of being. It's right there. It's right there. And one of the, so you asked, you know, why fatherhood? Why bringing it to here? I feel, well, 2 points. You know, the first is just that there just isn't anything that naturally kind of wedges your heart open in the same way that becoming a parent does. Right? Mm-hmm. It's at least possible. Right? I'm sure there's cases, but the simple human physiological connection and love is a wake up call to so many men, because it's like, oh, okay, like this is right. this is insane and just here now, right?
Yeah, you can't run from that one, or you could try,
right? So we get smacked with a love that maybe we have always been dreaming of, right? So I've completely lost my second point. That was one point, was why fatherhood is because of that. And the other, I got my second point now, is because fatherhood offers a situation of accountability that almost nothing else in life that I can see matches, right? Because this, and right now we're focusing on the heart connection, the love, the emotional connection, that part of it, which is only one part of it. But I mean, there's so much else that goes into fatherhood, but when we become dads, we now have this constant feedback loop of our presence in a way that, you know, partnership can do, other things can give you that as well. It's not solely relegated to fatherhood. But what I hear from dads is there's never been a more compelling or salient reason to lean in, right? To lean inside and to do whatever it takes. So there's really this really wonderful force function, I think, that happens. I'm going to add a third point here too, just sort of why is, you know, I've done a lot of, you could call it ceremonial work in my life. And, you know, some in sort of a Buddhist tradition, some in shamanic traditions, and some in just sort of the more modern men's work traditions that I've been a part of. And I got to fatherhood, and part of me was like, oh, we were just mimicking this. We were just playing at this ceremony, the ceremony of life coming, you know, through the body and onto the planet. Right. I was just like, mm-hmm. All right, this is the big leagues. This is what I've been training for, you know?
I totally agree with you about it being this motivating force if we let it be. Like for me, it, mm-hmm. when I held my son, which I got to tell you, I was super emotional up until the moment he was actually out. Mm-hmm. So like when he was, I mean, the labor was long. It was like 34 hours or something. So I had lots of emotional time to prepare. And I remember thinking in the middle of the birth process, thinking, this ends. I don't know how it ends. And this has been like a really long period of being in the liminal space between. Yeah. But when I finally held him, our midwife had said to me that a mother is a mother the moment she experiences conception, that the fetus is inside. But the father is until he holds the child. And it was almost like I was in shock. Like I was crying a lot on the edge. And then when I got him, I didn't access that. I couldn't. And when I was debriefing that myself the next day, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, I almost felt like a little bit of like, why wasn't I more emotional then? Like I finally got the thing I was like super emotional about getting. And then when I got him, I was like, whoa, this is fucking bananas. But it wasn't. Yeah, it took me like a couple days to then be like, oh, so yeah, what is in there?
I mean, it's a lot of pressure to cry at the right moment, man. You know?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Maybe I wasted all my tears before they were all out.
I mean, the statistics and just talking to lots of dads, you know, some of them don't feel anything for months. Right. And they get really worried about that. My hunch, just hearing your story, is I've also experienced our first labor was close to 30 hours. And I don't know, you know, sometimes emotions and the moment, I think there's like a zone where our emotionality can kind of like catch a groove in. Right. And so maybe below that is, it's hard to really pull it forward. And maybe above that is hard to pull it forward. But oh man, I wouldn't, if there's any parts of you still like, worried about that, I think it makes all the sense in the world. And, I don't know. It's overwhelming, right? I think these things go way deeper than emotion, and they're bigger than emotion too. Right. I think we could spend a lot of time trying to figure it out.
You know, it's a big deal. Seems like it goes to the depth of, you know, it humanizes us and mammalianizes us too, you know, like on top of the soul experience of like, I'm in charge of this child. And one of the episodes I was listening to you talk about, and I liked how you sort of extrapolated the statement, which I think was from Stephen Jenkinson, about like, does your child need to be protected from you? And I like how you extrapolated that to like, not a physical necessarily, but like, maybe we can walk into that. Like, what is different about being a father today than history? And what do you think of that statement and sort of leading into that?
Yeah, I feel like there's not much buzz about it. There's plenty of things going on in the world, but I think that the role of fatherhood specifically is in a time of drastic evolution, like fast jump, right? Like the big A to B change. And just to ground that in reality is the one generation jump from our father's generation to our generation. And I feel like maybe the word job description cheapens it a little bit, but it's also a pretty clear way to talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, listen, there's this traditional, I'm talking Western, you know, US, Canada, North America kind of values here right now. But the traditional thing is dad's job was to provide, you know, pretty much and stop. And if there was a need for security or protection, it was his job to do that as well. And I've asked my dad, you know, like what was front of mind? You know, what were you doing, man? What were you up to? And it was very simple. He wanted to provide a more robust, more comfortable life than he had. Yeah, that was it. not it, right? But that was that was what he thought about. And, you know, fast forward to now and in, you know, the recent past and the recent future, again, depending on what morals you hold, what values you hold, what part of society you're working in. But in my world, dads are being pressured. First of all, I just want to say, I think this is all good news, right? I want to make that caveat at the beginning. I think it's good that this change is happening. But the level of nurturing care that we are asked to supply and be with our kids is a huge jump. I remember one of my mom's things she would say, she always wished my dad would have bathed me or would have taken a bath with me, right? And so it was, that kind of stuff was alive back in the 80s too, right? There was a call for touch and skin to skin and those things. But today, I mean, so much more awareness of our inner world, and there's so much more chatter about it that I think we're putting together how important it is to create a healthy bond and pattern with your kid, right? Mm-hmm. So that's just one. Another area, which is a really big movement right now, which is equitable partnership at home and really understanding what the workload is that it takes to run on a household and have a family. And there's this, again, I think this is really great news, but as our gender norms and roles are shifting, that's changing the actual on the ground landscape within homes. Right. And so, I mean, this is something that has been very real for me too, which is slightly embarrassing, but is important to talk about, which is just, I've had a multi-year journey here of realizing, holy shit, I'm leaving so much to my wife to do, and I'm not even aware of it. And when she brings it up, my first reaction is defensiveness. And then finally, I wise up and listen. And so that's another piece, right? There's more than that, but then there's also the old responsibilities for the most part haven't gone anywhere either, right? So we're most men or many men are still providers, you know, financial providers of some sort, and now are sort of asked to share and inhabit this more, I guess, traditionally matronly or motherly or feminine part of the family system, and also still probably kill it at work and also probably do all this. And then the last thing I'll say, and I know this is a long rant, but the protectorship part is complicated today. It's super complicated because, again, we live in a rural place, in a very safe place. I do not fear for intruders. I do not fear for, you know, too much harm coming to my kids in a physical way. But, I mean, we could just unfold the kaleidoscope here, but like, you know, technology and screens and what's coming with AI and the general unease politically in the world. And just there's a moment going on here, right? There's a lot of change happening and it's quite scary. And so protecting our kids has gone from, you know, barring the door from saber-toothed tigers or, you know, a warring party from the neighboring tribe to this really complex, heady thing that really not many of us can really wrap our heads around, right? The last thing I'll say here, which is, I think, a really salient, simple example, is that 60 years ago, fathers weren't even let inside the birthing room, right? And they were out smoking cigars or golfing or whatever dudes did back then. And today, most of the time, dads are the primary birth partner, right? Or playing the primary support role in the birth of their children. And so that's actually where I want to land this rant, is that I don't think we're giving enough credence how big of a fucking deal that is. That is a huge job, which has almost no historic precedence. Right. I asked the experts in this field, like, were there other cultures? Like, was there ever a time? And everyone's like, not that we know of. Right. So we're talking about in human history, more or less, like in the last 50, 60 years, this change has happened. And now we are being kind of asked and to bring forth this whole other part of us. that we've been somewhat told since we were kids is probably not who we should be, or not, we're not, right. You know, we like, I don't know. I was never, ever rewarded for nurturing someone right. in my young life.
Right.
Just a totally different skill set.
Okay. I want to riff on that. I think that's incredible. It's like you have this rapid evolution of what people desire from men. We have this massive shaming of men that's culturally very prevalent with terms like toxic masculinity, which, don't get me wrong, unintegrated trauma and people taking responsibility for their lives, yes, but calling it toxic masculinity has like a 15-year-old boy who's hearing he's, just because he's a man, he's probably a bad person or capable of real evil things.
Yeah.
Then he hears, so he hears all this stuff he has to be apologetic for, and then he hears someone like Andrew Tate say like, zero fucks, like be a man, here's what that means. You know, exploit, da 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 da. You get money, you get chicks, you get power. Chicks desire that type of person because, you know, there's still the hierarchy of pursuing status and all that kind of stuff. We have the evolutionary drives that people try to pretend don't exist, but they exist. And so I love what you're saying, which is this, like, as the demands for men in relationship change, which really that change I'm seeing, I wholeheartedly agree, is more about connection, more about presence, more about relational, emotional skills.
Yeah.
But the challenge is that in order to fully step into that, one, I think you have that cascade of grief of not having touched it. So then the grief to it, let's speak in a heteronormative way, to a female partner is almost unsafe.
Yeah.
And especially because they have to undo the archetype of what they've learned a good man is, even though what they crave is an emotionally connective man. So there's almost like a disgust or a repulsion when the emotionality is present, because the emotionality is still not yet integrated, which I want to hear what you think about doing that, like bringing that integrated version of you, and how do you integrate it so that when you do stand in the presence of your partner, your wife, your whatever, or your children, you're able to hold grief, but you're not dumping. And then the last thing I just wanted to say was that I noticed this sacred tension, and I call it that because it's, I want to be mindful that it feels sacred to me, which is there's this immense pressure for me to provide.
Yeah.
And then there's this immense pressure for me to be present. And probably until I can make enough money to buy more space to then have more presence, those are actually in opposition.
Yeah.
And I can never be present enough. And that is hard because I can sense my wife's, even though I'm pretty present.
Yeah.
But I can still sense this desire that, and I've had to talk to her about it, is like, it just feels like it's never enough. And then here I have this like work that feels undone, that I'm leaving things unfinished or not at my level of mastery that they could be, because I'm like, it's almost like a codependent tension, but it requires the conversation. So what is that? Break it all down, Dan.
I mean, it's an immense amount. It's an immense challenge, I guess, is the simplest way I would say it.
It
right?
doesn't feel like there's a lot of compassion for it either, like societally.
No, people. Well, let's just be honest. Society doesn't like talking about this. Are you familiar with Richard Reeves and his book, The Trouble with Boys and Men?
No.
So this is good news. The good news is that he wrote a great book, and he works for the Brookings Institute and has their first like subsidiary focus base fully on boys and men, boys and male issues. Good. And he's out on the podcast tour right now, and he opened up his, I'm forgetting what show I just listened to him on, but he opened up this last interview basically saying, as he started to push his chips in to study and focus on boys and men, everyone in his world told him not to do it, and it was too big of a liability for his career. The people don't want to fucking talk about this. This makes people so uncomfortable. I did a TEDx talk way back when I launched Everyman, and I got up and was very fully emotionally sort of present in that talk. And the feedback I got afterwards was like, that was the most uncomfortable thing I've ever seen. right? A big, burly, masculine dude, like being emotional. And so I think what we also need to hold here is this larger overculture context of what's happening right now. There is a shift in men and masculinity in general that people just don't know how to hold, because it's like frying people's central boards. It's just not making sense, right? The old version is no longer workable. There is not a vision of a new version yet. And so we're just in this in between. We're in the in between right now. And actually I'm so excited to be sort of centering on fatherhood in this moment, right? Because I feel like if someone said, Dan, if you have to give us a map of where masculinity is going, the best thing that I would do right now is take a descriptive review of what fully engaged dads are doing in their lives right now. Like, that's it. Like, that's the best I can give you, right? Let's just, like, guys trying to do this huge challenge you laid out, trying to be present and connected and emotional and, you know, doing what it takes to hold the structure of a business or a career or what, like that whole thing, right? And it's just not easy to talk. It's not, you can't say it in 10 seconds. You can't put it on a quick meme. It's a lot. And so this, you know, back to like what's going on with that push and pull and that tension, it is huge tension. And I think the way that I like to think about it is that it is an initiatory moment for individual men and us collectively as men. And it's kind of like, what are we going to do? Because in an initiation,
right.
You are pushed beyond what you know. You are pushed beyond what your capacity is. And so like how I like to think about this is like, let's fucking do it. Like, let's like, I don't know. We don't know.
I'm fucking in, man. Let's fucking go.
Yeah, let's fucking do it, right? I mean, like, that's the moment. I feel like we're at that moment. And I think, again, this isn't just for dads. Like this, you don't need to be a dad to do this, but it's helping me make sense of it, to frame it that way.
You know that you were talking about how sometimes you might get some feedback or experience from your wife that the initial response is defensiveness. I relate to that as well. My sort of go-to default nervous system response is defensiveness. And then, reflection and then repair and all the things, and that cycle gets shorter and shorter and sometimes a little longer, but I'm faster to return. But the reason I bring that forward is that feels like a micro playing out of what on a meta level needs to occur for us as men, because it's like, how do I hold sort of Mari real truthful victimization of not being empowered with the skills and having a world that says, shut the fuck up and don't be sad and don't be aggressive and don't just fucking shut up, suck it up,
yeah.
Pay the bills. Your pain isn't important. So instead, what we'll see your pain as is addiction. We'll see your pain as disconnection. We'll see your pain as isolation. We'll see your pain as suicide. You know, but still you got to do the most dangerous jobs. You got to do these things. And it's almost like to acknowledge, how do we hold the tension of acknowledging the realities of what has brought us to this moment today, yet rise? Because ain't nobody coming to fucking save us. And certainly we don't need more women, and we don't need women over functioning more to try to get us to read more fucking books and do more things. Like, when do we as men look at the love we have? And I would imagine this is sort of the invitation that you're offering, is like, can we look at the love that we are about to have for our children, or we do have, or we have for the children of the world if we don't have children? But it's like, can we look at that and use that as the reason? Like, you could have all the reasons to be a little whiny. You could have all the reasons for your pain, and those, I'm not shaming it, but it's like, who's changing it?
Great question. And here's, again, I think a hopeful answer is, I would like to think, part of me would like to think we can change this in the next 5 years. And there we go. It's all fucking figured, right? Masculinity is whole, and men are honored and women are honored. Everyone's honored and it's all good, right? I think the reality, and this actually came from a chat with Stephen Jenkinson too, was just, you know, this is a multi-generational change that we're talking about.
Yeah.
At least in normal times it is. But I guess I question that even as I say it. Things are changing so rapidly now. It's like, I don't know. What's the time scale? But I guess what I mean about that is I am overwhelmingly motivated by a vision of like a movement, a wave of men stepping into their family courageously, fully courageously, and, you know, taking their licks and learning and healing and fighting and all of the things. And, you know, I think it's probably not in my lifetime that the full fruition gets to be enjoyed. Right. And at the same time, we do need leadership right now. We like that is literally like you mentioned suicide, and like this ain't getting better. You know, right now in the UK, it's the leading cause of death for men under 45. Number one,
suicide.
Wow. Number one. And whatever discomfort we have collectively about talking about this is like, we just need to, but it isn't this the truth? I'll take the micro version of this, right? How uncomfortable is it to get in an intimate, honest, open conversation with a man who, no matter who you are, right? It just doesn't happen. Right. And to bring in my work with every man, right? The call to action to every man was like, hey guys, we have emotions too. And guess what? It's not what you think. When you get in there and you open up, it's like a whew, you know, there was people in the beginning stages of every man, there was a saying going around like emotions are the new ayahuasca. And what that really meant was just like the energy, the human, that part of the human spectrum in men, when it's shut down, it's just a completely different experience of life than when you open that up. Right. It's just a very different way of experiencing life. And so, but we don't have the reps in people collectively, individually, we don't have the reps in to have these uncomfortable interactions, to look in the eyes of a man and see all of what that represents and feel all of what's happened in the past, present, and future and hang with it. It's a lot, right? It's this like the other thing that I've been privy to experience in these last 20 years is the, I did a podcast interview. I haven't released the episode yet with this guy named Rylan Engelhart. Fascinating dude.
Rylan.
You know Rylan? Yeah.
Yeah.
And in our conversation, he came up with the idea that men are a keystone species, right? And just this idea that, not that we're more important or anything, but just that because of the repression that has been rampant among men, that when you unlock that, the like ripples through the ecosystem of humanity are really, really huge. And I've thought about it in the terms for a long time that, you know, the old phrase that every generation of men needs a war, right? And what I take that to mean is there's all of this energy, testosterone fuel, just energy and focus in men. And I think it's fucking latent right now. It's blocked. Yeah, it's what's it being channeled toward? Like there's no vision, like there's, and I feel like it's a more complicated moment, right? But I think we can rise to the occasion and uncomplicate it a little bit and sort of like get guys fucking moving. Just get them fucking moving, man. You know? And I've been doing that for a long time, and it never doesn't blow me away.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about, you know, that uncomfortable moment when we've not met emotionality, and then our partner is kind of looking at us longingly, like desperate for us to soften, desperate for us to open. They're like, what do you feel? Like, your dog died, your dad died, you're like, hello. And it's almost like we feel shame that we can't access that. But I'm curious, do you think the resolution, like when you look at fatherhood as an initiation, we talk about this as a collective initiation that we're in with masculinity, which of course is an individual one. Is that initiatory process necessary to be done really with men first and elders and, you know?
Yeah, I feel that my gut says not necessarily, right? Hmm. My gut says is that new initiation practices, processes could be all inclusive, right? I think that that's kind of exciting. That's an exciting idea to me. However, I feel like there is, I know I've lived, I've experienced a massive value of having that, always forget what the right word to call it is, but that that space of similarity, right? And, you know, in this moment in the world where, you know, there's the call and the need to honor individuality and honor difference, right? I think that we have, to my sense is we have some work to do as men. We have some work to do together. Because I guess to answer the question really specifically is, a man can get good at emotions if he practices, if he goes and puts the reps in, right? Agreed. And I think that there is a level of it that is incumbent upon us to take responsibility for first. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean it has to be only with men. It doesn't. I don't think that that's an imaginary idea that it has to be there. But we have to find a way beyond just our primary partner to go do the work and not lay it all at their feet, right? And again, listen, there's just something. I have spent a fair amount of my life in all male conditions, right? When I was doing that wilderness work, later on, I made a TV show, it was all dudes, and I was on sports teams. You know, it's an environment that I have immersed myself in, and the nourishment and the life, the generativity that comes from those spaces for most men, not everybody who shows up, but a wildly high percentage, is a recognition that they're getting something that they probably always needed. And it's really primal. It's just a really simple primal thing.
Yeah. My experience with men's groups has been profound. Like when I'm part of a men's group and in the level of sort of accountability to integrity as a core premise of the group, where there's a loving call forward to potential, to possibility, to that then doesn't have to show up, although it can. It isn't necessarily, I don't have to bring any of that to my romantic relationship. Like I'm supported in a different way. And I think for a lot of us, we need healing with men. And there's something about the camaraderie. There's something about, I agree with you that there's a potent alchemical process almost that goes on with even the initiation of being emotional in front of other men. You know, like absolutely. You go to these men's groups and it's, in my experience, I remember the first time I went to one, I was thinking, I don't even know what I'm going to talk about. And then, you know, 8 hours later, I was sobbing in front of a group of 10 guys. And I could feel like clarity after that. It like this beautiful just sort of like letting go that would not have been available in a group of women. And I was always interested by like the moment you add one woman to that group, then men are like, oh, how should I look? Like we're now like posturing or like, you know, it changes things. And
I've experimented just, I want to comment on that. I've experimented with that a bunch, right? I've done all of the many, many different sort of formations at this point. The first woman we ever led into a retreat at Everyman was Esther Perel. She came as a guest teacher. And we asked everyone, all of the participants, you know, basically for permission and blessing, and they all gave it. And it's hard to compare, right? Because you can't A/B test. Like, let's do the retreat without her, and then let's do the retreat with her. But it was wonderful.
She's a sage.
She's an absolute sage. But I've also, did you ever do the summit series circuit?
Yeah.
Did you ever do? Yeah. I did this would have been 2018 or 2019. It was when they did an LA summit LA. And I did
that's the one I went to. That's the one I did.
It is? She came to, I did an activation or event there, and like 450 people came. And what I did was have men go face to face and share some prompts back and forth and just open their heart and speak. And I invited the women to come around and just witness. And it felt ballsy, right? It felt pretty yeah. scary to do it. It ended up being absolutely beautiful, like absolutely like a huge love explosion. And complicated, right? And complex and you know, not for the faint of heart in some ways. But yeah, I think, I don't know. I would love to go to the depths. And again, I've led cohorts and trips and wilderness retreats with both men and women and, you know, just all inclusive, everybody, anybody can show up. And they're wonderful as well. So I don't know, back to the question of initiation, I think that there is something unique about an all male experience. And I think that we, like, I'm leaning into that now, maybe in a generation, maybe in 10 years, that isn't the thing, but it does feel important right now. And I also want to drop this for anybody listening to, and you, the, you know, my sort of process and style of leading retreats and leading initiations has shifted pretty substantially in the past 3 or 4 years since I left Everyman. I left Everyman in 2020. And you know, the Everyman protocol it's brilliant and it's incredibly effective. And my mentor at the time, Owen Marcus, and one of the co-founders, like he brought this very simple emotional sort of protocol into the experience, and it was wildly, wildly successful and powerful. Since that point, I have been very intentionally balancing the sort of heart open, sharing, supportive with some sort of like tough love, more traditionally masculine elements and energy. And I just want to, I think the best book, the best thinking around initiation that I've ever found is from Richard Rohr, Father Richard Rohr. He has a book called Adam's Return, The Five Promises of Male Initiation. And I just want to say these statements. So it's based around these five promises that traditionally cultures would ingrain in their young men as they made their way into adulthood.
Yeah.
First, you're not important. Second, you're going to die. Third, you're not the center of the universe. Fourth, I'm losing. You're getting the drift. You're getting the gist. These basic messages that kind of de-role the narcissistic youth, which isn't a bad thing, which is natural. But these traditional initiations really, they give you a heads up. They give you a heads up that, like, guess what? This isn't actually about you, dude. I got a little off track there, but I'm so excited to share. Right. But if you combine that level of, get out of your own head, dude, you know, like grow up a bit with the sort of open emotive capacity. So like working to balance those out, I've had the most fruitful and rewarding, experiences with men in the past couple of years by really intentionally balancing these things out.
What do you think is the best way or the necessary steps for an expectant father or just a man listening to this to really step through the initiation that they're in? And how do you know you're in one?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're becoming a dad, you're in one. But if there's
You're in one. I mean, I think the first answer to that is you cannot be initiated on your own. You can. Life can initiate you. And this is from Richard Rohr. Like, life can initiate you. It's going to take a long time. It's going to kick the shit out of you. You are going to hurt. You're going to. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
So finding some level of connection, friendship, collegiality, group formation, whatever it is, like, and that's kind of the good news in all of this too, is that all of this, like this immense challenge that we framed here of what dads need to go through to sort of fill out their human spectrum. It's totally doable, but it's really barely doable if you're all alone. And if you come together with other men in the right, like you said, the power of a men's group, the power of a men's community makes it possible. It really does. And it just completely changes the weight. It goes from this heavy burden, suffer fest into like, okay, Like, you know, that good challenge feel, like when you get excited to go fucking make something happen, that's the change that happens.
That's the best.
So that's the most important thing, right? And traditionally, you don't get initiated into nothing. You get initiated into a community specifically, right? And we just don't have that. That's just not, it's not around right now. So we have to somewhat manufacture it and help it forward. But to the question of like, how do you know if you're in initiation? I mean, if you don't know what's up or where you're going, or if you just have this sort of, it's hard for me to separate actually like the need for initiation and the need for just community in general, right? I think those intertwine.
They're like required together, yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And I think of that, like the symbiotic nature, it's almost like the community is required to initiate the male because it is the male's idea that he must go alone. That is then dies in the integration of community. I do love the steps that you were talking about, Richard Rohr. It's like in a society, and sort of tying back to what you said about protection being so much more complex today, it's like you have the complexity of predatory behavior on the internet. You have, and I mean that from like a sexual perspective, but also predatory behavior from the actual social media companies that are predatory over the attention of children, especially in video games and things like that for young boys. And I'm not negating that there aren't positives to all these things. You know, it's how we found each other, but there's also, you know, like anything. And so bringing that back to, okay, well, if I'm in that level of protection, that level of, it's like, how do we, it's so much more complex than just like being a burly guy and hitting things or taking care of stuff. It's like, you're holding so much of the complexity of being a human today. And then you add to that, if you're American, you add the political complexity and the, like, where should I live? And the fear of censorship, the fear of, you know, all of it. And it's so easy to get lost in the overwhelm.
Yeah, 100%. Not easy times, man. It's not easy, but it's exciting too. I don't know. I fully feel the stress and the suffering and the challenge of these moments. And I don't mean for others. I mean for myself, right? Like I fully feel it. Like this is not easy. This is not an easy time.
There's no book on this one. It's like the fax machine disrupted things, but AI and fucking social media, like,
yeah,
it's a whole, and we're just starting to see the tip of the problems that these things are creating in young people, young girls too, you know, affected by social media. I know that you're now offering support. You have a community. And so for expectant fathers, what are the things that they, you know, if they're interested in finding more from you? And then also let's talk about your hunts, but first.
Oh yeah. Yeah, totally. And then
your hunts are, and I can't wait to talk about that.
Yeah. So Fatherhood Ready is the community for expecting dads. We have a comprehensive course that is part education, part rite of passage, right? So it's getting you dialed in on what you need to know for pregnancy and birth and postpartum. And then it's a big module on how to strengthen your relationship, and then a big module on your own inner journey, your own rite of passage with it. And we have a community to bring men together, and super fired up for that. And we also, in the early new year in 25, we're going to be extending and opening the Fatherhood Unlocked community, which is just a larger catchment system, right? Like just a community for dads in general. So I'm excited about it. I feel very, you know, I just talking to you is helpful, right? I think what's most clear for me is this concept of initiation. It seems like the best part I can play right now in the world, right? And the expecting dad is a moment where that initiation is already happening. And if you'd like to harness that initiation and take this challenge on, right, that's why we did this. That's why we built this, because it's a good moment. And I just think of, think of the little ones and the future little ones and their lives unfolding and the future generations. And I really think that it's a place that we can make a mark as men without ever leaving home, right? It's a huge mark we can make.
Well, such a powerful opportunity, you know, that accountability of the love for your child motivating you to then heal and resolve the things that, that if you look, it's like, man, if at the core we start to connect and attune to our children better, and people are resourced more so that they can through community and village, then now we have more present parents, more present father, which we all crave. And then if we don't get it, we become the unpresent father. So it's like at some point it has to stop. And I'm really drawn towards your excursions, and I'm 100% going on one because I'm so drawn to it. It's, and I, when I look at the pathology, when I like think, okay, if Dan had offered, if I had run across your offering 10 years ago, you know, would I have been drawn to going and hunting and like cutting up the meat and like butchering it? And I probably would have on like a very minute, like, oh, that would be fun.
Yeah.
But there's actually something primal about my draw now, which I think, you know, the sort of masculinity being latent, right? The power that you were talking about.
Yeah.
Feels like there's a lot of social or societal conversations. I mean, you can add endocrine disruptors and all that kind of stuff, which are the environmental realities that we're eating shit that interrupts our hormone production. But there's like being Canadian and then like witnessing what happened during COVID in Canada, I like now go, oh, I thought a democracy took care of itself, you know, and I actually need access to skills to protect my family, but I also need access to be able to like get food if I need it and do that kind of thing. And so there's that like primal reality, but then there's also connecting back to like the indigenous practices that I come from. Like I'm Irish and my dad's British and grew up in the States. And there's a lot of draw to that of like, oh, I need to get back in touch with being in connection with the cycles of life, knowing the animals I eat, participating in the sacred process of honoring the animal. So can you speak more to that? That process and why you do those and what do you witness in people who go?
Yeah. I mean, it is such a joy to me to take men on their first hunts. It is like as fun of anything that I can think about. I just had a call with six dudes last night. We're going on a hunt in November. And the draw, I mean, there's a couple layers. One layer is that, you know, I've been working with men for so long. And, you know, I had a little extra career in there for about 5 years. I was the producer and director of a really, honestly, what's now the biggest hunting show in the world called Meat Eater. Steven Rinella is the author and the host of the show. And yeah, so I spent 5 years on this like incredible as a part of a hyper modern hunting party that flew around the world and got dropped to the wilderness and made art out of killing and butchering and cooking animals. And so that is such a live part of who I am and my path. I grew up hunting and fishing and gardening in the Midwest. And so it was just part of who I am. But, you know, along the way here, you know, guys from the coasts or guys who just didn't grow up in any family or community where that was passed down to them, there's a longing, man. There's this question, right? And it's similar. Some of it's like camping or other just nature things. And part of this is the mystique, like the masculine mystique, like this is a manly thing. This is what you should do. And I think that's part of it. But deeper than that, actually in the same interview with Richard Reeves, I read this incredible thing that fatherhood as its own sort of identity came along because our babies have such big heads that the gestation period for humans is about half of what it should be, right? So our babies get born at 9 months. If we were more like other mammals, it'd be closer to 2 years. And so when our babies come out, they're completely dependent. And that makes mom not able to do a whole lot for some time. So if you've been through postpartum, you're aware of this, right? And so in that, functionally, dad went out to get food to feed baby, to feed mom, to feed baby. That's like a simple primal role that like you can come back to, right? When you come back to like where it started. So there is this like, and I remember when we had our first kid, we lived in Bozeman, Montana, and I would go out to, I forget the name of the grocery store, but I remember the feeling when I came back with like four big bags of groceries, like I'm going to feed my baby, right? But yeah. I joke, but it was really a strong feeling, right? And so there, this is just part of it, guys. This is just like part of being a human. And I think to make good on that and to experience it, it's just like, it heals a bunch of shit. It opens up a bunch of shit. It helps you find a sense of self and presence that, again, I don't know many other things that can do it right in that way. And the rite of passage is, you know, it's different for everybody, but there is this sort of hard to put your finger on sense of confidence or sense of comfort in your own skin, in your own bones, in your own muscle and blood, that you just like when you are elbows deep in a cavity of a deer or a pig, and you can't, it's my favorite type of learning, right? It's experiential doesn't even get there, but it's just like, you can't not, it's like a massive amount of life lessons, like in an instant. Right. And you could talk about it for fucking years and maybe get it, but you get bloody and it's just a different ball game. So yeah, I love doing it. I mean, I love adventure and I, you know, I think these are good ways for guys to sort of get on the path of what we're talking about here. The type of sort of initiation or community or anything a guy needs. I think adventure is a nice way in.
Beautiful. No, I love that. And I can't wait to go. And then we'll have to do a podcast episode debriefing my experience. I'm so excited for it because I can just crave it in my bones. And I'm sure for some of you listening, it's like a similar, like you know that you want to be more connected to the primal experiences that are just part of our DNA. Yeah. And yeah, man, I love everything that you do, that you stand for, the evolution of the work that you continue to bring forward. And for everyone listening who's like, okay, how do I get more of, like, where do they find the program? Dan has the podcast, Fatherhood Unlocked, so you could check that out wherever podcasts are. But yeah, where's the rest of the deets, hunting trips, all that?
Yeah, so the hunting trips are on riteofpassagehunting.com. You can get to any and all of this, though, just at dandoti.com if you want to go to the central source. And I've got a handful of things going on, but yeah, dandoti.com.
Perfect. Thanks so much, man. I appreciate you.
Yeah, I appreciate you too. Thank you for this.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.